It's the Steam Room. Ernie Johnson and Charles Barkley.
Yes.
Great to be back with you. Man, hey, alive. Man, it's good to see you, brother. I missed you, too.
You got me stuck with the...
Wait, you and Tim Kiley did an outstanding job with Sally Field. Listen to that whole podcast.
Man, what an adorable, really good, pretty lady.
Really good.
I told you, I had a crush on her my whole life. Then to meet her in person, she was awesome, too.
I would have asked more questions about the Convent San Tanco.
The what?
Don't you remember the Flying Nun? That was the first time anybody saw her, the Flying Nun.
I know, but what did you just say?
That's where she was based out of, the Convent San Tanco. That's for some reason, that's stuck in my brain.
Wow.
My whole life.
I told you, Ernie, you would be great on Jeopardy.
I know
a lot of useless stuff.
Yeah, that was useless. Anyway, it's good to see you.
Good to see you. Welcome back, brother.
Thanks, kid. I appreciate you. What you got here for a first of all?
Well, I got to start a little deep first. You know, I want this podcast to be fun, but man, this Tyree Nichols thing. Whew. Man. I don't even know. That stirs so many emotions for me. Number one, you know, you're mad, you're angry, you're sad. I mean, you got to be careful because you don't want to say something you regret, but you just feel sadness more than anything. I mean, obviously you're angry, but you just feel sadness because...
And shock.
Shock, horrified. I mean, there's so many words, and I recommend, no matter how painful, how brutal it is, you need to look at that video. You need to look at the video, because lack of humanity, it's all on display, and it just hurts your heart. If you got any feeling, has nothing to do with race. It has, like, if you got a heart, you can't fathom treating another human being like that. And it's supposed to be about the people who's supposed to protect. You know, you see it on the cards, protect and serve.
Right.
Protect and serve. And it's hard for me to imagine people treating other people like that. And we didn't get to talk about it last week, but after watching that tape, I wanted to address and just say, man, my heart aches for it, because this is just about humanity. Like I said, this ain't got nothing to do with, it has something to do with the police. It has something to do with race, but it really, to me, is about humanity, how we treat each other.
Yeah, and how that traffic stop turned fatal.
Like, no traffic stop should turn fatal.
And to hear him yelling for his mom as he's, 100 yards from her house when this is going on. No, it was, I don't know what you can possibly say that you haven't already, that folks haven't already said and you know, it's just one of those things that you can't wrap your head around.
And no matter how you're looking at it, it's just wrong and sad. So I wanted to address that. And man, we just got to do better. Like you always talk about the company, be a better human.
Yeah.
We just got to do better, man. I mean, I can't say anymore because it's just too emotional. But man, we just got to do better. We just got to do better. So I'm going to lighten this thing up now because, listen, our job is to, you know, entertain people and have fun on these podcasts. I don't want it to be too deep, but did you see the 22-year-old girl playing as a 13-year-old?
I'll be honest. I didn't go in depth in the story. I kind of saw a headline that was being disciplined because was it a coach who was playing as a
13-year-old. And you're like, are you serious right now? And the other people let it go on. They let a 22-year-old woman play as a 13-year-old kid. And imagine that, Ernest. She was better than everybody else. She was the regular She was the regular old Cheryl Miller of the 13-year-old division.
How did not since I haven't seen all the details of the story, how did this all come up and who eventually blew the whistle?
I don't know who blew the whistle, but everybody should get fired. Everybody should get, and
is this playing for a high school team?
I don't even think this high school. Are you not 13? You're not.
Or
just like it's a junior, like it's like middle school. And you say to yourself, who thought this?
Eighth grade.
And
if you're the 22-year-old, was it the 22-year-old's idea, or was it a coach who said, look, you could probably pass for 13. Go play. If you're 22, you got to say, stop it.
You know, one of my rules on TV is I want to never say somebody should get fired. That's always been my rule.
Right.
I can say somebody's not doing a good job, but I said, I will never say somebody deserves to get fired. This coach deserves to get fired. That's the first time I've ever said that in 23 years. Somebody's got to get fired in this scenario.
This coach deserves to not coach anymore.
Come on, man. That's just brutal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that lightened the mood. That's for sure. That lightened the mood.
But I got another one. One of the best to ever do it. The best to whoever did. Just retired.
Tom Brady.
Nope.
Oh, see, you threw it out there and I took the hook.
Louise Cobbs just retired. She was a crossing guard for 50 years.
Wow.
She just retired at the spry age of like 90. The way I do my first of all is I write down things I see on television. Some of her grandparents and parents came to say goodbye because their kids and grandkids go to school where she was the crossing guard.
They were young and not, yeah.
And it was, I saw this story and it brought great joy to my heart.
That's tremendous.
And I think she's 92. I want to say 92 or 93.
At any rate, a long career as a crossing guard.
Miss Louise Cobbs, congratulations on a wonderful career. And I want to give a shout out to the parents and the grandparents who came to say goodbye to her on her final day.
Tremendous.
Now you are correct. The GOAT retired, Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking to Von Miller, by the way, in our next segment.
Yes.
Who's certainly got some experience playing.
I want to say this about Tom Brady.
He
is obviously the great, in my opinion. It's just always my opinion. There's no such thing as an expert, America. Ernie, like I said, people are expert. There's no such thing as an expert. In my opinion, he's the greatest football player ever. And obviously one of the greatest jocks of all time. Because I always tell people, when you talk about Michael, Wayne Gretzky, Djokovic in tennis, and Federer and Nadal.
Serena Williams.
I'm trying to think the GOAT in other sports. Wayne is the greatest hockey player ever. Tennis is debatable. But the reason I think Tom should be in the conversation, not just the greatest football player, the greatest jock, because, man, in football, it's always a one-and-done scenario. You know, when you got Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky or, you know, those other guys, you're going to have the best player all the time. But when it's every game is one and done, that means you are special. This dude's been in 10 Super Bowls.
Won seven of them.
Been in 10, though.
Yeah.
And the thing that's scary, the three he lost are all-time classic games. You know, the my Eagles beating him and Eli Manning beating him twice on two of the greatest plays ever. So I just want to give a shout to Tom Brady. We're not friends. I met him a few times.
What do you mean you're not friends?
Well, I think because we have a relationship, but like we don't hang out all the time.
Yeah. And you're still infatuated by just him looking at you.
Yeah, it's a pretty man. Never make eye contact with him. No. Because you make eye contact with him.
You turn to stone.
I'm like, Once I looked him in the eyes, I couldn't remember. It was just gibberish after that. But he is one of the most humble people to be who what he's accomplished. And I just want to say thank you, Tom Brady. It's been an honor and a privilege to watch you do your thing and enjoy the rest of your life.
Yeah, even if that includes TV.
Yeah. You know, Tom, I think for me giving you some advice on that, once you play a sport, you're addicted to it. Like, I'm going to watch basketball. I can watch basketball all the time because I love watching these dudes. To get paid to do it makes it even better. So I know Steve Young did a great thing talking about the two deaths. Steve was great, obviously. But he talked about there's two deaths when you play sports for a long period of time. And it does feel like a death. Steve was 100% correct. But he did say, hey, there's going to be a next chapter. You don't know what it is, but it's going to be a next chapter. But the advice I was going to give Tom, you love football, obviously. The next best thing to plan is watching it and getting paid to talk about it. So, listen, have a great retirement, man. It's been an honor and a privilege. Enjoy the rest of your life, brother.
Well said.
Yes.
Is that it for First of All?
That's it,
or
brother.
Or do you have something else on that
nope,
little yellow
it.
Sheet?
That's it.
Oh, remember. Oh,
shout out Louise Gibbs.
Yeah, but have you jotted down what you need for next week?
No.
Bring Cap some gin.
Oh, yeah, Cap. Cap, I'm going to get you some Vulcan gin. Cap is under the perception that I think about him when I'm not on the podcast. Cap, I love you, but I never think about you unless I'm talking to you.
We'll be back with more on the Steam Room. Von Miller, our special guest.
Oh, this is going to be awesome.
The active leader in sacks in the NFL.
I got to apologize for fanboy opening when I met him one time.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah, make sure you do that.
I did.
We are back inside the Steam Room.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome right now.
It really is because we have the opportunity to talk to one of the greatest linebackers to ever play the game.
Two-time Super Bowl champion. Yes.
Eight-time Pro Bowler. Von Miller joins us. And it's our distinct pleasure to have you. We only have one rule in the Steam Room, Von. Do not take your towel off.
And I appreciate you guys. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. And I've been a fan of Chuck and Ernie and, you know, the things that you do on the show for a very long time, man. And I'm excited to be here.
So, Von, you got a very popular podcast.
The Voncast.
Yes. You only interview football players?
No, I mean, I interview anybody, but, you know, I've done podcasts. I've done interviews with everybody. Just this focus of this year was only football guys, though.
Now you're gonna be on Radio Row Super Bowl week, right? So you're gonna be, and I know you've probably seen all that. Have you done that before? I mean, that's a zoo, isn't it? Got all these radio stations, all these different platforms out there, and just talking Super Bowl, talking to guys the entire time. You looking forward to that?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And you know, it's all about perception. You know, the second best thing, other than winning the Super Bowl, if you're not going to play in the Super Bowl, is going and attending the Super Bowl and all the events and the media, you know, to really, you know, get your narrative out there and talk about the things that you want to talk about. You know, it's nothing greater than going to the Super Bowl and winning it. But, you know, if you're not fortunate enough to do that, you know, going to the Super Bowl, being a part of that event, being a part of the spectacle is enjoyable as well, too.
How's your knee? That's the most important thing.
It's good. You know, whenever you have injuries like this, it's 75% mental and 25% physical. You know, your body's going to do what it's going to do. You're either going to heal faster or heal a little bit slower. But, you know, at 10 weeks, you should be here. 12 weeks, you should be here. 3 months, you should be here. And that's just how it is with any, you know, injury like this. So I think the most important thing is keeping, you know, the mental right and focusing on the things that that I really enjoy. You know, I have a son that's due in about 5 days now. This will be my second boy. I play for the Buffalo Bills. We got a really good team coming back next year. And I just choose to, you know, focus on the bright side of things, you know, and that's what recovery is all about.
So this injury happened on Thanksgiving. So where are you in the rehab process? And what can you tell the folks listening just about the process of rehab? And How painful is it? How tough is it to be immobilized for a while? How much are you encouraged to do?
You know, they're really trying to hold me back. I had surgery with Dr. Cooper here in Dallas, and he did a great job. I was walking and exercising 2 days after surgery, and you know, I feel really, really good. I've been working out. I've been doing all the things that they, you know, they have on the slate for me to do. And you know, it's just about being consistent. It's not a 1 week thing. It's not a 2 week thing. It's not a 1 month thing. You know, it's 9 months, you know, to a year, and you just gotta, you know, keep your head down and grind. And you know, like I said, it's about perspectives. You know, you could choose to be down and think about, you know, all I got hurt on Thanksgiving and this and that. But, you know, this is my 12th year in the league. I got a 6-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. It's not going to be my last time out there. You know, I got two beautiful boys and great team and a lot of great people around me to lift me up. And, you know, I'm just taking it one day at a time. And, you know, I'm positive that I'll be ready to go when the season starts.
You know, football and boxing are my two favorite sports. Because I take it takes tremendous courage to do either one of those sports. Like basketball, we're kind of wimps. You know, tennis, baseball, we're all kind of wimps. But to play football, I played football one day, and then I realized, damn, I don't want to do this. You talk about your two boys. Do you, and safety obviously is a really big deal, are you going to encourage or discourage them from playing football?
Chuck, I just want them to have passion in whatever they want to do. It really doesn't matter, you know, what they gravitate towards. I think really the only thing that I'm going to force them to do, the only thing that I'm going to encourage them to do is play golf. You know, I wish I would have started early, you know, playing golf. I want them to not even remember learning how to play golf. But other than that, man, I just want them to have, you know, the same passion that I have for football. I want them to have that same passion in whatever they do. They can be lawyers or doctors or, you know, be on a PGA tour or, you know, podcast or be a teacher. Whatever they want to do, I just want them to have the same passion that I have for my craft.
Do you show them a lot of videos of Charles playing golf to try to encourage them?
You know, my son, he's 18 months. So instead of putting on the Cocoa Melon and all the animation and stuff, I'll put on like some golf highlights of Tiger and stuff. And, you know, just try to put it in his face so he can try to gravitate towards that a little bit early. You never have full control over what they do or whatever they gravitate towards to. But, you know, I try to influence this golf thing. I started playing golf in 2020. I played golf when I was younger. My grandfather, he introduced me to the game, but I didn't really like pick it up and I didn't really get the bug or fall in love with it until 2020, man. And I want them to have that same love for golf. So, you know, I just try to put the videos, and I got them the little kid golf clubs and the kid golf balls, and I just try to influence them in that direction.
You know, Von, it's so interesting you say that because Andrew Toney introduced me to golf. I think I was 26 at the time. And as much as I love basketball, because this basketball has given me every single thing in my life, I've actually got sick of playing basketball. I never get sick of playing golf. I play golf. I live in Arizona. I play golf every single off day, and I can't wait for the next day. Can you explain that golf bug?
You know, it's really nothing like it. I went out there, and my grandfather, he introduced me when I was a little kid, and, you know, it's kind of tedious, and, you know, you're learning something new. So I didn't really pick it up. In 2020, Odell Beckham had came to Denver, and he was rehabbing his knee. And I asked him, like, you know, what do you want to do? And he had an off day. I was like, what do you want to do? He was like, man, I want to go play golf. And I asked him again. I was like, are you sure? Like, you want to play golf? He was like, yeah, man, I want to go play golf. So I went and got my clubs. You know, every athlete, you know, you get free clubs and golf gear. So I went and got my clubs out the closet. And, you know, we went golfing, and we started betting on, like, putts. who's gonna have the worst hole? And I'm like, man, this is fun. And then you get, and then he got the better of me that day. And then that competitive nature that you have is like, man, I gotta go practice. I went to the PGA Superstore after that. I went and got a new putter, golf balls, gloves, outfit. I'm putting on a putting green, and you go to sleep thinking about golf. You wake up thinking about golf. You know, you're thinking about, you know, chipping, keeping your weight on the front foot, and when I drive. And it's just all of these little things that keep you interested in the game, man. And, You know, it's nothing like the buggers. And then you go to the PGA Superstore and you get your golf swag right. And
dude, that, you start, that place.
You start figuring out what clubs I like, PXG, do I want PXG Titleist? And then you just, it's just so many different things, man. And you just get deep down in this hole, man. And, I enjoy being in that hole.
Von, Chuck and I know exactly what you're talking about. That is a dangerous place to walk into, that PGA Superstore, because you see all that stuff. And then I know they do something to that putting green in there. Because you're draining 25 footers, picking. I'm buying this putter. They've got to have. There's just got to be some kind of a groove on that thing. It's, oh yeah, man. I got that. This is the stroke. It's a dangerous place to go.
You know, Yvonne talks about all the free shit you get when you're famous. So Kenny came to my golf tournament one year. So Kenny,
it's a good story, right here.
So Yvonne, Kenny comes to my golf tournament. Somebody gave him some golf clubs in the 80s. Kenny has never played golf. I said, yo, man, come to a golf tournament. People going to pay to play with you. Kenny comes on the range, breaks out some woods, and they're persimmon woods that he got in the 80s. And everybody's like, yo, man, what you doing? He says, what do you mean? Kenny has persimmon woods in, I think it was like 20. It's probably around 2000.
And this was not like some homage to the greats of golf. This was like, yeah, somebody gave me these clubs and
back
I never
the
used
80s,
them.
Yeah, I never used them. I'm like, yo, man, they don't make persimmon woods
anymore. Like, what's
anymore?
That sound he keeps hearing on the range? What's the ding? What's the ping? You know, no, that's unbelievable.
Hey, Val, who's the best pro golfer you ever played? Well, you might have played with a few, but who are some of the great? You ever played with pros?
You know, I played with DeMarcus. DeMarcus Ware, he looks like a pro to me. And I know y'all have like y'all little
yes. Hey, so wait, can I count on you for Tahoe next year?
Next year I'll be ready to go 100%. I've been getting ready for Tahoe since I started playing golf. That's like my, you know, golf. And then the PGA, the senior tour when I turn 50, you know, so that'll give me 17 years to get ready for the senior tour, and then Tahoe. Those are my two like goals in my golf career. I have to play. I have to make it in those two events.
Hey, let me tell you something. First of all, you in Tahoe next year if you want to be in Tahoe. We would love that. And me, you, and DeMarcus going to play that first day. Let's make that happen. But you,
for sure.
But you got to be careful about the senior tour thing, because there's a great story Harvey Pinnick tells. He's like the senior champion at his golf course somewhere down in Texas, the great teacher, Harvey Pinnick.
Yeah.
And the guy said, he's like the club champion. He says, Mr. Pinnick, what do you think of my chances of being on the senior tour? And the guy says, well, how old are you? He says, I'm like 35. He says, well, I want you to meet Fred Couples and Ben Crenshaw. They're 35 too. You think you're going to be able to beat them in 15 years? Because nope. Like, that's the thing you have to think. Guy, I'm trying to think. You say you're 33?
I'm 33.
So
that'll give me 17 years.
Yeah, but you would have to go look at the PGA Tour and see who's 33, because those are guys you're going to be playing against when you get to the senior tour. That's what's funny about that.
Yeah, but keep that goal.
That's just what keeps me motivated. Yeah. You know, that's what keeps, you know, you got to have those goals down the road. And, you know, I look at it, I've been playing football. This is my 12th year in the league. I played 4 years in college and 4 years in high school. So that's 20 years of playing, you know, football. And these guys, they've been playing golf since they were like 2 and 3 years old. So that'll just give me, you know, the basics, and I'll be ready to go. That's my goal. You know, no disrespect to any of the pros out there, but it's just one of my golf, you know, career goals.
Well, what's your handicap? What's your handicap right now?
Oh, I'm high. I'm in the high teens right now.
Oh, high teens. So what clubs, and the club and the ball, that's the biggest decision you have to make. What clubs did you decide on?
I'm a PXG, Gen 4s, and I'm a TaylorMade, a TP5. You know, I try to play with the same ball every time I go out there, because some of these balls, you know, they feel different. And, you know, so I try to play with TaylorMade, TP5 yellow every single time.
Let's swing this back to football talk, and let's talk about what happened in Buffalo. I mean, it got the world's attention with DeMar Hamlin. I know you were hurt. You were not in Cincinnati the night it happened. Were you watching as it happened? And how has that whole situation impacted you?
Yeah, I was watching, and, you know, football, you kind of get accustomed to, like, people getting hurt. and even serious injuries sometimes, even, you know, the ambulance coming out there and picking guys up and carting guys off. You just get accustomed to that. You know, that's the part of our game. You know, that's the ugly side of our game. So I was watching at home, and it's a Monday night broadcast all across the world. Everybody's watching. And first, you know, we had Teron Johnson. He had got hurt the play before. So I was like, dang, he had a serious injury the play before. And I'm like, dang, what's wrong with him? You know, they pick him up and he goes to the sideline. And then DeMar gets hurt. And then they go to commercial break. And then they come back and he's still injured. They go to commercial break again. And then they come back to the game and he's still injured. And I'm like, man, like, this has got to be serious. Because usually they just pick him up and they go off. And I'm on the NFLPA, the group chat on my phone. And I look at my phone and they said that, you know, he went into cardiac arrest. And I'm like, man, like, they had to give him like CPR. I'm like, man, like, this is like life or death. You know, this was way before like they had announced it, you know, on Monday Night Football. So immediately you start to think like, man, possibly, you know, my teammate could be in serious trouble right now. And you know, I'm watching the broadcast at the same time and, you know, they're talking about canceling the game. And I'm like, man, that has never happened in NFL history. They're going to finish this game. And then, you know, as time went on, they took the players in the locker room. And, you know, I talked to some of my teammates. It's hard to watch your teammate go through the battle for his life, him get carted off, and you're still not sure if he's going to make it or not. So, you know, my teammates, they were dealing with that. And, you know, guys said they couldn't play after that. They wouldn't be able to play until they found out he was all right. And it was just a very, very serious situation. And, you know, I just feel honored and privileged to be associated with the Buffalo Bills. You know, I'm very proud of, you know, DeMar and the way he's handled the situation and, you know, the light that he shed on, you know, on so many different things. And,
for sure.
You know, it's just so great. It feels so good when great things happen to good people, man. And even before this happened to DeMar, like, he was all about love. I had a talk with him and Dane Johnson. They both went to Pitt. They both went to Pitt. And I was talking to them before that game. And I was like, man, you know, I really enjoy the way y'all play, man. Y'all look like first and second round picks. I didn't know that y'all was late round guys, man. And y'all come to work every day. You know, it's just like a little conversation that I had with those guys, man. And I just feel honored and privileged to be associated with the Buffalo Bills and DeMar Hamlin and to see the type of things that he's doing with the newfound attention that he's got, man. It's super cool.
You know, we're all watching this. And then you see guys crying. And you, like, that's the first time I'm like, wow, this is really scary. Because normally the ambulance come out, the stretcher come out, they get rid of you real quick. Then the game continues. To see the look on those guys' face, that was one of the scariest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. And, you know, see my teammates react the way they did, I knew it was something serious. I knew it just wasn't like, you know, a concussion or a neck injury or a spinal injury. I knew it was, you know, I knew it was more serious than that, even though those injuries are serious themselves. You know, I knew that this was serious, man, to see Josh react the way he did and Saran Neal and all the tough guys that I'm around and, you know, Ed Oliver, and for the camera to go to those guys and those guys react the way that they were, I knew it had to be serious because we all get accustomed to seeing, you know, guys get knocked out or, you know, a back injury or whatever those are, and you put them on an ambulance to take them off. But, you know, to see my teammates' reactions and, you know, to see the worry on everybody's face, man. And, you know, it was a serious situation, man. But, you know, the Buffalo Bills, our training staff, you know, Denny Kellington, Nate Bresky, Joe Mika, Marissa, you know, Dr. Brisson, all of those guys, the protocols that the NFL had in place to, you know, to ensure his safety. And, you know, Coach McDermott, you know, he's a great leader, you know, to be able to lead those guys, to be able to just say, man, we're not going to play this game. And we don't care, because we were the number one seed at the time, you know, for him to just, you know, put life over football, man. You know, I just feel honored and privileged to be associated with all those guys for sure.
Hey, Vaughn, so Tom Brady announces his retirement for good this time. From a defensive player's standpoint, tell us what it's like to line up against him and what he brought to the game that no other quarterback ever has.
It's, man, you know, every single time that I've played against Tom Brady, I've played at a level that I wouldn't normally play at. And, you know, you go out there each and every time and you want to get sacks and you want to make plays and you want to win the game. But when you know you're going against the best, like, it just brings another level of competition out of you, man. And, you know, each and every time I went against Tom Brady, you know, he did that for me. And it wasn't until probably 2019. Yeah, it was 2019. I went to the Kentucky Derby. Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, and they had, you know, it was like Jimmy Garoppolo. They had all the guys out there. And, you know, we were at a club or whatever, and I was sitting next to Tom, and I was talking to him, and it was like, bro, he's one of the guys. Like, Tom is like one of the guys. And, you know, usually, you know, a guy wins 6-7 Super Bowls. You, as a competitor, you have this internal, like, man, I got to beat this guy, man. Like, I don't like this guy. He wins Super Bowls. But once you really get to know Tom Brady, like, there really is no reason not to like him. Like, he does everything right. The only reason not to like Tom Brady is that he wins. And that's not a good reason to not like anybody. So over the years, man, I've, you know, built a relationship with Tom Brady, man. And for the type of guy that he is on the football field, man, he's even better off the football field. And he was like that with me. He had, you know, no ulterior motive. Like, I go against him on the football field. You know, he was super cool with me, man. And, you know, he gave me his number, and, you know, he did my pass rush summit and did so many things that he didn't have to do. This is Tom Brady, one of the best quarterback to ever play. I'm kind of biased because, you know, Peyton Manning. I played with Peyton Manning, and I love Peyton Manning. So when you call Tom Brady to go, even though he is, I always like to, you know, throw Peyton Manning in the conversation. But, you know, Tom Brady, he's an incredible guy, man, on and off the football field. As our relationship, you know, developed, man, I start to love the guy even more, man. And, you know, he says he's done for good, but, you know, we just had to wait and see.
Yeah, you know, first of all, Vaughn is correct. And you see that I watched Teddy Bruschi and guys. I met Tom Brady. We're casual friends. I've never met a guy that great who makes you feel special. Like, he wants you to know, like, you know, I'm one of the guys.
Yeah.
And you hear Teddy Bruschi talk about it like that. You hear Vaughn talk about it. Like, the times I've been around Tom, and, like, he makes you, like, yeah, we're on the same level. He makes you feel very, very comfortable. And I'm like, wow. I was like, I've told friends, I mean, this dude don't even know he Tom Brady. He treated us like, he just, like, sitting here talking to me like we just two regular guys. And I'll appreciate that. So, you know, Vaughn, well, first of all, I'm an Eagles fan, first and foremost. But I got great admiration for the Buffalo Bills mafia. What is obviously, you haven't been there that long. What's the Bill mafia really like?
Man, it's the passion, you know. And you know, all fans have passion, but they really highlight the passion for their football team. And I think the passion was developed over time. You know, we went to 4 straight Super Bowls and lost. They had 4 Hall of Famers on their team at one time. They had Bruce Smith, Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, and they had Thurman Thomas. So many great players on one team. And, you know, the Buffalo Bills community is not that big. You know, it's a small city, small town. You know, all they got is the Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, everybody bleeds, you know, red, white, and blue with that accent of black, man. And, you know, it snows there. It's not sunny there. You know, it's all about football and food. It's all about football and food. The food's great there, man. And I think that's what fused the Buffalo Bills, man. We still play at Hallmark Stadium. We got a new stadium on the way, but, you know, the tradition and the games that we won there, man, the fans, they still feed off of that, man. And it's all about passion. It doesn't matter if it's hot outside, cold outside. Like, Bills Mafia is going to show up, and they're going to give you everything that you got. So if you're a player, if you're a coach, and you're standing in front of that, man, it just motivates you to be the best that you possibly can be.
Eagles Chiefs, who you got?
I got the Eagles, man. You know, I love the Chiefs. You know, the AFC, the AFC team, you know, I've faced the Chiefs, lost to the Chiefs 10 years straight. You know, it's hard for me to root for the Chiefs. Probably a little bit of hate in there. but, you know, I just think, you know, the Eagles have a very, very, really good team. And, you know, the Chiefs have a really good team, too. Best quarterback in the league. If he's not number one, he's number two. If he's not two, he's number three. And we all know that those guys rotate weekly. But I think that offensive line of the Philadelphia Eagles, is something to be dealt with. Lane Johnson is playing out of his mind right now. Defense is solid. Jalen Hurts is solid. They got Darius Slay. They got players all over the place. The way that they built up that team, man, it's remarkable to see. And you know, I just think you know, the Eagles will be able to do it. Now the Chiefs have been in this situation before. You know, they played the 49ers. The 49ers were supposed to win that game. 49ers had a great offensive line, defense, all the things that you say. And then, you know, Patrick Mahomes does what Patrick Mahomes does. So it'll be a game. It'll be a game to see, man. You can't ever count out Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce or, you know, Frank Clark or Chris Jones or any of those guys, man. But, you know, me, I can't root for the AFC guys. I gotta go with the NFC. You know, I got to go with the Eagles.
What is it from your experience, though, as a Super Bowl champion twice, that tells you that on that day, you're going to have the trophy?
For me, both times I played in the Super Bowl, each game, those games, I wasn't nervous at all. You know, usually you have a little bit of, you know, emotions or a little bit of nerves, not a feeling of I'm not ready to go. It's just, I want to go out here and I want to do something crazy. I want to break a record. I want to perform to a level that I've never performed before. And that's how I go into each and every game. But the Super Bowl, I just knew it. I just felt it. I just knew it. And maybe it's the 2 weeks that's leading up to that game. Maybe it's, you know, that it's not another game after that. Maybe you know that this is the biggest game that you possibly will ever play in. And, you know, it's hard to be nervous in those situations for me. And when I woke up that morning, I just knew that it didn't matter who I lined up against, that I was going to be able to be successful. You know, I like to visualize me having success. I like to have positive self-talk. And, you know, playing in the Super Bowl, those are two things that you need to be successful in the Super Bowl. So those two games, man, I wasn't nervous at all. All the coverage that they have for 2 weeks straight, talking about this team, talking about that team. And when we played the Carolina Panthers, you know, the Panthers were the favorites. And they kind of fueled me. It kind of fueled me to like, hey, you know, I can't let, you know, the Carolina Panthers go out here and do this. You know, it kind of fueled me to go out there and play to another level. Last year with the Rams, you know, and another thing that whenever you're playing for somebody else, whenever you're playing for other people, I think that brings out a little bit more as well. Last year we were playing for Aaron Donald. I wanted to get him his first Super Bowl. That's really the only thing that he was missing on his resume. He's been Defensive Player of the Year, all these other things. And, you know, I really wanted to get him a Super Bowl, get Sean McVay a Super Bowl, Matthew Stafford. I wanted to be like the Super Bowl whisperer for the Los Angeles Rams. So whenever you're like doing things for other people, it kind of brings out the most. And, you know, those 2 days, man, it's not like basketball. Basketball, you get 7 games to get it done. 7 games to settle it out, you know. You could be the lesser team, but on that day you win, like it's over and you got to get ready for next year. So it's amazing to be able to participate in the Super Bowl, and we'll definitely be back with the Buffalo Bills for sure.
Well, number one, Ernie took my question. I was going to ask you about, like,
sorry about that, Chuckster.
No, because, you know,
our minds are so, yeah. I think it just speaks to how cerebral we both are.
Yeah, that's true. You know, because what I was going to ask him about, so for me personally, I had never made it to the finals, and we got to the finals, and my team was so nervous for game one, we never recovered. So I was like, so what's the difference, the atmosphere between the Super Bowl and the regular season and a real playoff game, like even the AFC championship? Like, I had been in big games before, but my team was so tight for game one against the finals, against the Bulls, we never were able to recover. We actually lost game one, and game two we played better, but we never were able to recover because we were so nervous for game one. I was going to ask you, you had already won the Super Bowl. What advice did you give the Rams going into the Super Bowl?
As the whisperer.
Yes.
So my motto to the guys is don't blink. It's okay to be nervous. You know, it's okay to be nervous, but afraid, no. We're not going to be afraid. You know, eyes wide. Trust the preparation, and we're going to go out here and play. And I feel like that's what separates good teams from other good teams. It's not, you know, everybody, when you get to the NFC Championship, AFC Championship, divisional games, whenever you get to those games, those teams are good. Those teams have quarterbacks. Those teams have defenses. Those teams have special players. I feel like what separates good teams from other good teams is the mindset. And that's what I really preached to the Los Angeles Rams last year, was really the mindset. You know, they had already been there before, and they lost to Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I think that was 2016 or 17. So they were still hungry. But, you know, I just, you know, my thing was really the mindset part of it. So I always talk about mindset, and I would talk to guys and talk to guys about visualization and positive self-talk to help them tap into that mind space that we need to be to win a Super Bowl.
Last thing before we let you go, Chuckster, are you a big egg eater? You
no.
like eggs? You don't like eggs?
I don't dislike them.
Yeah. Because, you know, we've seen a lot of news reports about an egg shortage. Seen those on the news. Here we have a Texas A&M Aggie, a chicken farmer, right? So if we are really desperate, Vaughn, can we reach out to you for a dozen eggs or one of those cartons of 18 XLs?
Yeah, I get you guys right, man. You know, chickens, eggs, you know, whatever it takes, poultry. You know, I get you guys right.
We appreciate that.
Hey, man, number one, it's an honor. You know, we've actually met before, and I hope I didn't fanboy when I met you the first time. I was like, we were in L.A. At a bowl game, and he came in the room, and I ran over to him like a fanboy, and I said, hey, man, it's just an honor and a privilege, blah, blah, blah. And it was an honor to meet you then, and obviously you've had so much more success, man. Keep doing your thing and get well soon.
Yeah, was that annoying for you,
Vaughn? Hey, Chuck, man, I appreciate you guys, man. I appreciate you guys. You know, the crazy thing is my very first basketball game, I had to be at least 6 or 7. I went to see the Dallas Mavericks play the Suns, and you were like the star player on the team. And like my dad was talking about Charles Barkley. So I've been a fan of you my whole entire life. Even then, this was my first time I wrote like a note. You know how you had a fans? I did like a sign, like, I forgot what it said, but it was like Charles Barkley, something. And I had like wrote you like a note just in case, like I had saw you. You know how like kids get, like you live in a whole different world, but just in case I had wrote like a note, that way I can hand it to you. You know, we didn't get a chance to do it back then, but I've been a fan of you for a very long time. And it's an honor and a privilege to be on the show with you and Ernie, man. I appreciate you guys.
Wait, Will, man, thank you for the kind words.
And Vaughn, did he big time you? Did he walk right past you? Did you see this little 6-7-year-old kid with a note?
You know, I didn't get a chance to see, you know, the players or be around the players. You know, as a little kid, you're not sure what to expect and
exactly.
You know, all this stuff. But, you know, I didn't get a chance to, you know, to see Chuck. But, you know, even coming on this podcast, I was like, man, like, I used to be like, still, I was like, man, Chuck was the very first athlete that I really idolized from an early age, man. And that all started from me going to a Dallas Mavericks game. So I appreciate you guys for having me on the show for sure.
Hey, listen, thank you for the kindness. And let me show, hey, can I get on the Vaughncast, brother?
Man, for sure, man. I had a guys. We said, I tell you, we could go play golf in Arizona, man. Whenever you get a free day, I'm gonna be out there all next week too. So hopefully, we can link up. We get all this stuff.
Hey, man. First of all, I cannot wait. Hey, get Odell to come out to Tahoe too, man. It's the best week ever. You're gonna love all the guys. We would love to have you because me and DeMarcus have our little battle every year.
DeMarcus is really streaky good though, like. I had the mistake before I get off. I know it's time for me to go, but I made the mistake of playing DeMarcus at Cowboys Golf Course here in Dallas, and I should have known. Like, DeMarcus were at Dallas Cowboys Golf Club, and this guy went nuts. I think he had, I'm not even lying to you, I think he had about 6 putts for eagle. You know, he didn't hit them all. He didn't hit them all, but he had about 6 putts for eagle that day. And we were betting, you know, me and DeMarcus, we're about the same skill level, so we're betting and stuff. And I absolutely got fleeced that day. So, you know, I'm looking for payback with DeMarcus, man. And it'd be an honor to play with both of you guys, man.
Hey, let's set it up.
Thank you guys.
Tahoe, come on, Tahoe, brother.
I got you. I we'll get it done.
Vaughn Miller, thank you so much for joining us, man. Have fun at the Super Bowl.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you guys.
Thank you, brother.
The Vaughncast on the BR app, live from the Super Bowl. Next week. I can't believe you would just walk past him. Here he is. He's got a note for the Chuckster, his hero, and you just blew him off.
He was 6 at the time. Stop it, Ernie.
6 or 7.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Come and join us in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
I noticed something that TK said on the previous podcast. You do. You sit there and listen to that, and you close your eyes as if you are really enjoying that whole vibe.
I am. I like, you know, I tell you, that's what they call me. You know,
yeah, stop. I know. Okay. Old brown eyes.
Old brown eyes.
I don't care about that.
You know, things went smooth without you.
They always do. So we have a bunch of calls, apparently, from Cap.
Oh, I like
on
it.
The Charles answering machine, 404-987-0330. And without any further ado, roll it.
Hello, world. This is Charles Barkley. Leave me a message.
Hi, guys. Alfonso here from the Philippines. A very loyal steamer. I used to listen to you guys when my dad had cancer and was getting treatment until he passed away last Valentine's. Questions for Chuck. I'm also a golfer, and I wanted to ask if Chuck ever cheated, nudged a ball for a better lie, or dropped and pretended that his ball was safe when he is playing golf.
Hey, okay, a chance to come clean right here, man.
First of all,
you can go through your whole career.
Sorry about the loss of your father, first and foremost. Thank you in the Philippines for being a loyal steamer. I think that golf...
Are you going to answer the question?
I'm going to. Golf is probably that one sport, like nobody in the NBA would say, yeah, that was a foul. Like, mm-hmm. No, hell no, I didn't foul him. Hell no, I didn't foul him. No, I guarantee you there's no offensive lineman in the NFL says, you know, I kind of held him a little bit. You can't cheat at golf. You cannot cheat at golf for the simple reason, you got to understand something. Guys are not following you into the woods to see what kind of lie you got or if you found your ball. Golf to me.
Actually was your ball.
Yes. So golf to me is the ultimate game of honor. So to answer your question, you can't cheat at golf, period.
Well, he didn't ask if you can cheat at golf. He's asked, have you ever cheated at golf?
No.
Good.
No.
So you've never like hit a ball into a tree as we saw last weekend and said, oh, no, I know. Yeah. I know it's even though it wasn't going toward that tree, that's my ball.
Yes.
So you haven't done that.
Yes.
But you have hit a lot of trees.
I have hit a lot of trees.
Yeah. Next call.
Who put trees on a golf course anyway?
Hey, Ernie and Chuck, I'm a first-time caller but loyal steamer. My name's Michael Gow, and I'm a middle school teacher in Massachusetts, but I'm one of the founders of Rhode Island's only bird club, the Ocean State Bird Club. Ernie, anytime you're visiting our little state, I invite you to email our club. We would love to show you around some of our favorite birding locations. Also, you have to check out my friend's radio show and podcast called Ray Brown's Talkin' Birds. I think you and your wife would love it. Chuck, hey, I know you're not a birder. I know you're not a bird watcher, but please know that there's a strong contingency of black birders and photographers in this country. Check out Black Birders Week, where black birders from around the country come together to celebrate their common interests in birds. That's it for now, guys. Thanks.
Michael, thank you very much. Thanks for the encouragement. Thanks for backing me up, because a few weeks ago, Chuck was astounded that I bought bird seed for the bird feeders I have around the house.
Yeah, I'm still astounded.
Well, you shouldn't be, because everybody in here was like, yeah, we buy bird seed. Come on, they're fun to watch. Birds are fun to watch.
What's the nerd's name again, who just called in?
Michael.
Michael, listen, first of all, you're a nerd.
No, you're not. You're a good dude, Michael.
Hey, Michael, you're a nerd.
And thanks for being a middle school teacher also.
No, thank you for being a teacher. Now, you know how I feel about
exactly.
teachers.
Exactly. Hey, and I'm sure he wouldn't be fine with having a 22-year-old playing on an eighth grade team either. Hey,
Michael, thank you for being a teacher. I admire and respect teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being a teacher. That being said, if you're going out here, what's that website he wanted us to plug? Ray Brown something?
Yeah.
A bunch of nerds. That's what they are. Thank you for being a teacher, but a bunch of nerds.
Bunch of people who appreciate.
If I see a good looking bird flying by, I'll say, hey, that's a pretty bird. I ain't going to take out a camera and start taking pictures.
Well, you're missing out. Next call.
Hey, Charles. This is Brandy. First of all, I'll say that I have been a fan for a really long time. I have no idea what teams you have played for over the years, but that's okay. You are a name that I know. Anyway, I wanted to comment on your comment about feeding birds. It is not a white thing to feed birds. It's just a nice thing to do. And I find it quite attractive, actually. Maybe you should start feeding some birds as well. Anyway, you can call me back if you would like to. Love you, honey. Bye.
Thank you, Brandy. You say something, and then folks out there saying, what do you mean you don't
y'all
like
found
birds?
The one black lady in America that feeds birds.
Oh, come on. No, come
y'all
on,
found
man.
Out of how many millions of people in the world, y'all found the one black person who feeds birds? Brandy, number one, thank you for the kind words. But, Ernie.
What? They're fascinating.
Things never said before by Charles Barkley. Like, I've said a lot of crazy shit in my entire life.
Yeah.
I've never walked in a store and said, hey, where y'all keep the bird food?
It's bird seed.
Bird seed. Okay. See?
How about people who have birds in their house? Like a canary or a parakeet? How about that?
Those called pets.
Yeah. So what's the difference? What's the difference?
You like birds? Between a pet. Yeah. They're built between a pet.
Well, what, are you going to go walk the canary? No. They sit in the corner. Okay? So here's the deal. So at the same time, you say, man, I really like birds, and I like a variety of birds. Whoa, look at that. Yeah. And you see all these different kinds.
I don't mind seeing them flying around, but I ain't going to stop to feed them and stuff. And
you don't have to actually feed them. And you put it in the feeder. They fly by. You're at the window and say, oh, isn't that a pretty bird?
You know, won't they say,
hey, take a picture of that bird.
Well, how about they
or
say?
Or you get a bird buddy, like I have that feeder called the bird buddy. And when the birds land, it takes pictures of them.
Well, why can't? You know what the bird's really thinking? Can I land at somebody's house who got some real money? They can put like some real food in here instead of this shitty bird feed stuff.
That's what
if I was a bird, I'd be saying that.
Yeah.
Hey, can they put some like some chicken or something in here? I don't want to eat bird food all the time.
Gee, I could really stand a burger, said the Cardinal.
That's exactly right. Yeah, get me a McDonald's burger. Can I get some fries? I don't want just bird feed all the time. That's what birds are really thinking.
Next call.
Hi, Uncle Charles. This is April from Georgia.
Hey.
I just saw the interview with you and Ernie and Candace and Kirby Smart. Go dogs. My question to you, Uncle Chuck, is what have you been doing to lose some weight? You definitely have been looking slimmer. You're looking good. You're looking crisp. So do share with us for 2023. What are you doing to lose weight? And also, I like your eyebrows. They're on fleek. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you so much for that call, April. I can tell you what he's doing. He's eating bird seed. That's right. What he's dropped
a
lot of weight.
Number one, thank you. I am on a real strict regimen to lose weight.
What is it? She wanted details. What have you been doing to lose weight?
I'd rather not say right now because I don't want to get criticism.
What are you doing, man? Is this unethical?
It's not unethical.
Really, it's making me uncomfortable talking about it. Next call.
Hey, Chuck and Ernie. This is Jacob from Central Wisconsin, Wild Rose, to be exact. When this next episode airs, my wife and I will be road tripping down to Nashville to move my sister in. She's moving down there. Just curious, what's the longest road trip either of you have been on? And or maybe what's the best road trip you've ever been on? Huge fan of the show, loyal steamer. Keep your towels on. Thanks.
Thanks, Jacob.
Road trip.
While you think, I'll tell you this, and this is a true story, 9/11. I was in Australia.
Ooh.
And we were flying back after the Goodwill Games, landed in Los Angeles on the morning of 9/11 after everything had happened. And so we land at LAX, they close everything down. They said the airport's closed. And so Steve Fiorello and Michael Winslow from our crew, three of us rented a van and drove from LA to Atlanta nonstop, 36 hours.
That had to be the worst road trip in the history of civilization.
You know, well, given the circumstances in the country,
yeah, I understand
it was that, like but, really, it was a surreal kind of a deal. But yeah, we just, every 3 hours, we switched drivers, bang. We stopped for food a couple of times, stopped for gas a couple of times, boom, 36 hours, we were back in Atlanta.
Worst road trip ever. I haven't taken many road trips in my life, to be honest with you, but I have been thinking about something. You know, they've been trying to get me to write another book.
Who has?
The publishers.
Certainly not the American public.
All my books have been very successful. That's okay.
I'm messing with you.
Shout out to the great Mike Wilbon.
You and Wilbon going to collaborate again?
Not really. Well, Wilbon's my big brother. Shout out to Mike Wilbon. I love you, boy. So we have written 3 books together, and we have been very successful. They've been trying to get me to write one. And I'm like, no, my books are very personal to me. They mean a great deal. But I have this idea if I ever want to do it. How about me and some of my friends, and I might bring you in on this, Ernie, too.
Are you including me as one of your friends,
Yes, yes. But
you and your friends and you.
No. Like, it's going to be different friends around the country.
Yeah.
Getting a minivan. Not a minivan.
Like a big old thing. Cruisers.
Cruisers. And go and play the best golf course in every state.
That would be an interesting and very fun venture.
Yes. I want to play the best golf course in every state.
Yeah.
Like stay in a city might probably do 2 a day.
Play 2 courses a day?
2 courses a day.
I thought you wanted to go to the best one in every state.
I do.
So you're gonna go to 2 states in 1 day to play golf?
I can drive from Georgia to Alabama, dude.
And play 18 holes of golf in each of those?
I could start in the morning, play 18 holes.
Yeah, I think it's a little ambitious to say you're gonna play.
Let's say one a day.
One a day.
That would be really cool. Yeah, cause that might be better because I would like to have a meal in that state. But that's the only
what
thing.
What a stunner that is.
No, that, see.
Okay, here's our final, and it has a video element.
Whoa, element.
Hey, Chuck, this is Sergeant Matthew Knoll. I was actually calling. I don't have a question. I just wanted to say thank you. About 6 years ago, I got to come home and surprise my family at a Boston Celtics game. And you guys actually televised and talked about it after.
They have played 24 minutes in Boston, and the highlight of the first half was this: Staff Sergeant Matthew Knoll of the Air National Guard surprising his family.
That's awesome.
At TD Garden.
Yeah, that is awesome.
That is awesome. Look at Mom. Just awesome.
And growing up, you were one of my favorite basketball players and one of the first basketball jerseys I ever had. So the fact that you were able to, give me a shout out, my family, has really meant a lot. And these last 6 years, I've been trying to find a way to say thank you. And I finally got a shot. So thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Ernie, Kenny, Shaq. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to show me and my family some love. I really appreciate it. And it's meant a lot. Thank you, guys.
Wow.
That's tremendous. Matthew, it's our pleasure. Oof. And as I look at that clip, I remember that. It was like, no, no matter what happens in a basketball game, a moment like that,
that
captures the raw emotion.
I'm getting emotional just thinking about it.
Like, I love all of those.
You know, shout out to anybody who's been in the service. You know, one of the great travesties of our country is how we treat our vets. We need to do better how we treat our vets. And especially, because we play stupid basketball. We not that important or significant. But shout out to you, man. Thank you for your service. That is pure joy right there. And that makes it, man, thank you.
What a perfect way to end the show.
Wait, I need to say something before we end the show. Last weekend, I went up to West Virginia, for Bob Huggins.
Right.
Man, I want to thank the people of West Virginia for being so awesome. You know, Bob's mom passed away from cancer. So he does a big fundraiser every year. And I was a special guest. It was 2,600 people there, raised over $2 million.
Nice.
In one night. And I just want to thank Bob Huggins, who's a great friend, the people of West Virginia for opening their hearts and their wallets. Man, thank you guys for the hospitality. I had a wonderful time. Auburn, and then I stayed and went to the Auburn game the next day. Heck of a game. West Virginia outplayed us, but we played pretty good in the second half, awful first half. But I just want to thank the people of West Virginia, man. And, Bob's goal is to build a cancer hospital to honor his mom. And, you know, that West Virginia fan base is amazing. And there's no doubt in my mind he's going to get it done.
See, two great ways to end the show right there.
Thank you, Matthew, man.
Thanks to Matthew.
Oh, man.
And good on you. And,
think about that, man.
And good on
6 years he's been waiting to say thank you.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Huggy Bear is the best.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening. All you loyal steamers out there, it's been our pleasure. Back next week.
Yes.
Which will be a few days before the Super Bowl.
E-A-G-L-E-S.
Are you going to the Super Bowl, or are you doing your Vegas thing
again? Come on, man. You know I'm going to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know I'm going to Vegas. 26 straight years going to Vegas. Got the same 10, 12 guys.
I'll pass. See you next week.
Come on, Ernie. Go to Super Bowl with the boys.